The following Stealing the Mind of America presentation by Kent Hovind is entitled Evolution. Check your brains at the door. For a complete audio and video teaching tape catalog, call Compass at 1-800-977-2177.
I've got quite a few unusual hobbies. One thing, I collect public school science textbooks. I have hundreds of them, and I research them very carefully, and I am deeply concerned about what our students are being taught. And what I want to share with you in this session is some of the things that the kids are being shown in these textbooks that simply are not true. It's normal for anybody who believes something to want to get somebody else to believe that. Everybody tries to spread their religion. The humanists know they cannot get a crowd together. If you announced all over Colorado and said, we're going to have a humanist meeting in Vail, Colorado, you would get 20 people to show up, no matter how much you advertised. But you can have a conference for Christians or people like this, us here today, and get hundreds or thousands to show up. The humanists know they cannot preach their religion in the normal way. So what they've decided to do is to put all their efforts into getting their religion into our textbooks. That way, we are paying for their religion to be taught. And that's precisely what's been happening now for quite some time, folks. And I want to share with you some things that will probably surprise you in my long time study of this subject of what on earth is in these textbooks and how this evolution theory is not even a good theory. It is a pagan religion. It is masquerading as science. And for many years, on the back of my business card, I've been offering $10,000 to anybody with any scientific evidence for evolution. I don't make this offer because I'm looking for a fight. I'm not looking for a fight. I'm like the Quaker that said, sir, I would not harm thee for the world, but thou art standing, I'm about to shoot. I'm just sick and tired of them using my tax dollars to spread their religion in our school system, and I think somebody ought to put a stop to it. Now, one of the things that has always amazed me in my 15 years of teaching school and now 10 years of traveling and speaking on this topic, it has amazed me how two people can look at the same thing and come to opposite conclusions of what they're seeing. Two people can look at Grand Canyon. They're both looking at the same canyon. One guy believes in evolution, so he says, wow, look what the Colorado River did for millions and millions of years. The Bible-believing Christian stands there and says, wow, look what the flood did in about 30 minutes. How was that canyon formed, huh? Was it a little bit of water and a whole lot of time? Or could it be a whole lot of water and a little bit of time? Either one would make that hole, you know. I had a debate a few months ago with this one atheist, and he was saying how the Colorado River, the Grand Canyon is proof that the earth is millions of years old. I said, sir, did you know that the top of Grand Canyon is higher than the bottom? He said, yes. I said, did you know the river only runs through the bottom? He said, yes. I said, did you know the top of the canyon is higher than where the river enters the canyon? Which means if that river made that canyon, it had to flow uphill for millions of years to cut the groove deep enough to flow downhill. I don't think so. That river didn't make that canyon. The flood made Grand Canyon. The river just flows through the crack, that's all. But you know, two people can look at the same thing and get opposite ideas of what's going on. Anybody in the crowd know what this contraption is? It's a veterinarian holding a strange-looking machine. Any farmers or vets out there? That's right. This is a calf puller. A what? A calf puller. Once in a while, the cow has a hard time having that baby calf, and so they get the calf puller out there, hook the cable around the calf's legs, and jack the calf out of the cow. Well, this farmer had the calf puller out one day. He's pulling a calf. It was a breech birth. Back feet coming out first. Not good. And so the farmer had the cable wrapped around the calf's back legs, and he's trying to pull the calf out. And the city fella stopped and staring over the fence, thought, what on earth is going on? And the farmer said, have you ever seen anything like this before? The city fella said, no, sir, I've never seen nothing like this. The farmer said, well, you got any questions? He said, yes, sir, I do. I got one question. He said, how fast do you figure that calf was going when it ran into that cow? No. You're looking at this all wrong. We are not separating the wreck here, fella. You see, two people can look at the same thing and come to wrong conclusions of what they're looking at, folks. The Bible warned us that was going to happen. 2 Peter chapter 3, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers. Did you know there are people that scoff at the Bible? I deal with them on a regular basis. I attract them like a lightning rod. And it says they're going to be walking after their own lust. And by the way, that's the reason they scoff at the Bible. It's because of their lust, not because of their science. There's no scientific reason to reject the Bible, but some people reject the Bible because it chaps their hide. Well, get some Vaseline, man. You're going to need it, because we're going to be judged by that book, okay? And the scoffers walk after their own lust, and they're going to say, where's the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. That's a very important phrase, by the way. I cover that on my videotape number 4. And they're going to, the Bible says, the scoffers are ignorant of how God made the, they're willingly ignorant of how God made the heavens, and the word heaven is plural, and that's very important. I cover that on videotape number 1. How God made the heavens and the earth standing out of the water and in the water. That's a strange phrase. But I cover all that on tape number 1. We don't have time today for that. But the scoffers are willingly ignorant. In the Greek, that means dumb on purpose. The scoffers are willingly ignorant of how God made the heavens, and they're ignorant of the flood. See, they don't want to admit God created the world because that means God owns it. And that means there might be some rules. And there are, by the way. And they don't want to admit there was a flood because that means God has the right to judge his creation. And he does, by the way. This is his world. He can wreck it if he wants. And he's coming to wreck it again, folks. I saw a bumper sticker said, Jesus is coming, and boy, is he mad. Oh, man, that'll preach. Well, you've all heard of Charles Darwin. He was a scoffer in the last days. Charlie Darwin went to Bible college to be a preacher. When he graduated at age 22, he couldn't find a job. So Charlie Darwin set sail on board the Beagle for 5 years to sail around on this boat and collect bugs and birds for somebody back in England. Charlie was a loser at everything he did. We don't have time to go into all that. But as Charlie sailed around, he brought his Bible with him. He just got out of Bible college. And he brought with this book right here, Principles of Geology. That book was hot off the press by a guy named Charles Lyell, who was a lawyer from Scotland. Somebody calculated that if all the lawyers in the world were laid end to end around the equator, we would all be better off. But Charlie Darwin sailed around, and for 5 years, as he sailed around, he read this book several times, and this is the book that totally changed his life. Charlie Darwin came back a skeptic, a scoffer, because Lyell said the earth is millions of years old. Lyell's the one who had a profound influence on Charlie Darwin. Later in life, Charlie said, disbelief crept over me very slowly. I felt no distress. He began to lose confidence in the Bible. But as Charlie sailed around to the around the world on this boat, he came to the Galapagos Islands off the coast of South America. There on those islands, Charlie noticed there were 14 varieties of birds. They were all the same species of finch, but their beak shape was different. Some had a big beak for picking up, you know, cracking hard nuts, and some had a skinny beak for catching insects or something. Charlie studied all the birds and said, you know what? I think all these birds have a common ancestor. I bet you're right, Charlie. I bet it was a bird. And then Charlie wrote in his book, Origin of Species, which I have right here in my hand, Charlie Darwin wrote on page 170, it is a truly wonderful fact that all animals and all plants throughout all time and space should be related to each other. Now hold on a minute. You see a bunch of birds and you decide they all came from a common ancestor. I'll go along with that. But that doesn't prove birds and tomatoes are related, which is what Charlie believed. See, if you're going to get into a discussion on evolution, and I do this every day, I've been on, I think, 3,500 now radio and TV call-in talk shows, and I speak over 700 times a year on this, and I get skeptics flock around me like I'm a lightning rod or something. And they always say, well, we've got proof for evolution. Well, what Charlie observed is what we sometimes call microevolution. Now, microevolution can be described as a fact. Dogs produce a variety of dogs. Nobody's going to argue with that I know of. And roses produce a variety of roses. This is called microevolution, and that's one meaning of the word. But what happens is, they try to make the students believe in macroevolution. Now, macroevolution is a fantasy. It's never been observed. Charlie observed microevolution, and then he took a giant leap of faith and logic and thought it meant macroevolution. See, dogs produce dogs, but they're still a dog. A Great Dane and a Chihuahua are still a dog. And believe it or not, they are interfertile, except for a few mechanical problems, but they can produce a puppy. And it's probably a fact that the dogs, the wolf, and the coyote are a common ancestor. But they're the same kind of animal. I mean, stand 30 feet away and look at them. A 3-year-old can tell the difference. Okay, boys and girls, which one is not like the others? We have a dog, a wolf, a coyote, and a banana. I mean, it's still the same kind of animal. Probably the horse and the zebra had a common ancestor. Stand back and look at it. It's the same kind of animal. Well, what they do in school is they give the kids examples of microevolution, which is what the Bible teaches. They bring forth after their kind. 10 times, it says that in the first chapter. I think God wanted us to get that message. It doesn't say after their species, after their kind. They're the same kind of animal. And then they want the students to believe that this is proof for macroevolution. It's a giant leap of faith and logic to go from micro to macro, and there's no connection between the two. And they think the common ancestor was a rock. They asked me to come speak at this university in Boston one time, and they couldn't find a professor willing to debate, so they said, well, you can come speak if our professors can ask you any questions they want. I said, okay, I'll be glad to do that. They said, we'd like to let them ask you questions so they can show their students how dumb you creationists really are. I said, I'll be glad to come for that. And so I got my charts out, which I don't have with me. I left all my stuff home this trip. I have a timeline showing what the evolutionists believe. You know, 20 billion years ago, there was a big bang. And so I asked them the question, what exploded? And where did it come from? Well, they don't know. But then about 4.6 billion years ago, the earth cooled down and formed a hard rocky crust. And it rained on the rocks for millions of years and turned them into soup. And the soup came alive about 3 billion years ago. And this early life form found somebody to marry. Pretty good trick. And something to eat. And he very slowly evolved into everything we see today. One professor was getting kind of mad about that time. He stood up and he said, Mr. Hovind, there are 250 varieties of dogs in the world. I said, sir, I have never counted them, but I believe you. He said, do you mean to tell me that all these dogs came from just 2 dogs off of Noah's Ark? You expect me to believe that? Ha, ha, ha. I said, sir, would you look at what you're teaching your students? You're teaching your students that all the dogs in the world came from a rock. He didn't have any more questions after that. That is what they believe, folks. It's a fantasy. Evolution. And see, whenever I start into a discussion on evolution, I got 3 debates coming up next month at Wayne State in Detroit and Peoria, Illinois, at Eureka College, where Ronald Reagan went to school, and one in Georgia, Columbus, Georgia. I always start off with this chart right here that you're seeing, micro and macro evolution. Because I have learned if you define the word, the argument's over. They hide behind the mysterious definition of this word evolution. Because when I say the word evolution to some professor, he is right away thinking of thousands of examples of microevolution. Bacteria become resistant to drugs. Roaches become resistant to poisons. That's a fact. What they don't want to admit is there are limits to those resistance. Yes, a roach might become resistant to drug or resistant to pesticide, but he will never become resistant to a sledgehammer. Okay? There is a limit in there someplace, okay? And so he will think of thousands of examples of microevolution, and he doesn't understand how I can't see it. He really doesn't. But I'm thinking of macroevolution, and I don't understand how he does see it. And that's why when you get into a discussion on evolution, if you don't define the word, you're wasting your time, folks, because you're talking apples and oranges. You're not communicating. So Charlie observed microevolution, and he believed in macroevolution. I like to show evolutionists this picture. This is, as far as I know, the world's largest rock group. You know of a bigger one? I'll say, fellas, do you believe there's any possible way these faces appeared on this rock by chance? Do you think the wind could have done that? Do you think erosion or thermal expansion or exfoliation, you know, what caused this anyway? They'll say, well, obviously it was design. I'll say, very good, very good. Now let me ask you this question. Do you believe George Washington, with all 50 trillion cells in his body and all of his complicated interacting systems, the nervous system, the blood system, circulatory system, the lymph system, do you think all that happened by chance? And they'll say, yes. You don't think their face could come on a rock by chance, but you do think their whole complex anatomy could come by chance. I just have one question, if you believe that. Are you dumb in any other area? Was that the only one? Had to be designed, folks. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. I mean, come on. I come from Illinois, corn country. Did you know there are so many kinds of corn up there, they have to number them. You'll be driving down the highway, and you'll see XL104-7. Don't mix it up with XL102-9. Something will blow up. But I'll tell you right now, folks, you can crossbreed your corn from now till the cows come home, and you're always going to get corn. You'll never get a hamster or a tomato or a whale to grow on that corn stalk. It ain't going to happen, folks, okay? You're going to get a variety of what you started with. There's varieties of cows. Nobody argues with that. And they probably had a common ancestor. A cow. That's not evolution. It's microevolution, but I prefer to just simply call that variation. It's still the same kind. So don't even let them use the word evolution on stuff like that, and the argument will be over. And sometimes there are mutations. Here's a bull with an extra leg growing out of his back. Five-legged bull. He can't run any faster. By the way, notice the bull got an extra leg. He did not get a wing, a feather, or a beak. Very important. You see, a mutation can only give you a scrambled version of information already present. It can't give you something new. He already had the gene pool to make a leg. He just made one in the wrong place, that's all. So that's not really helpful. It's a mutation. Textbook, though, says mutations provide the source of variations. See, according to the evolution theory, there are two things they go on. Mutations make something new. Natural selection makes it survive. Neither one of those are going to work for evolution. Mutations do happen, there's no question. Here's a short-legged sheep. Textbook says this mutation would not last in nature. Well, of course not, man. He's the first one the wolf is going to catch. Go, boys, go. Here comes the wolf. Herman didn't make it. No, he sure didn't. Here's a two-headed turtle. That's a mutation. It's a mutant. Not ninja, but it is mutant. Look, he's going to freeze first winter. Nobody makes a double-neck turtleneck sweater. I've never seen them, folks. I've looked. They're not out there. See, a mutation is scrambling information that's already present. It's like taking the letters from the word Christmas and making up a bunch of new words. You can probably all do that at Christmas time around your house. You can make a lot of words out of Christmas, but you'll never make Xerox, zebra, or queen. The letters aren't available. And a mutation is not going to cause something new. It's only going to scramble what you have. But the textbook says, boys and girls, evolution and natural selection go together. This textbook says evolution or natural selection causes evolution. Now, hold on just a minute. Natural selection is sort of like a quality control. Only the strongest or healthiest end up surviving, generally, not always, but generally. How many have ever worked at a factory where they produce something and when they get to the end, they check it before it goes out the door? You ever work at a factory like that? I worked at General Motors Truck and Coach in Pontiac, Michigan when I went to school. We built the medium-sized trucks, C60, C70 series. They came down the line, we all did our thing, put our nuts and bolts and screws and hoods and fenders and motors. When it got to the end, they checked it. There's a whole crew of people, that's all they did was quality control. Now suppose you had a bunch of folks in quality control that had perfect vision, they caught every mistake. Nothing got past them. How long would it take that process to change the truck to a helicopter? You say, it'll never change it to a helicopter. But that's my point. See, quality control can't change the product. It can only keep it a good product. That's all it can possibly do. And natural selection can't change the animals to something else. It can only keep the animals strong. That's all it can possibly do. So don't lie to the students and tell them natural selection is going to cause evolution. That's brainwashing, folks. See, creationists, we believe in natural selection. We thought of it first. It happens. By the way, survival of the fittest does not explain arrival of the fittest. Very important key point, by the way. You might want to remember that one. And if a whale goes through a school of fish and eats 80% of them, it's not survival of the fittest. It's called survival of the luckiest. And that's really what it's more like in nature, survival of the luckiest. But see, a lot of people that I've observed in my time of doing all this kind of stuff, they can make good observations and still come to the wrong conclusions. It's possible to be brilliant scientists and still come to wrong conclusions. I'll give you an example. A bunch of brilliant scientists one day were going to study the frog to see how far it could jump as they slowly removed its legs. They took a frog with four legs and said, jump, frog, jump. Frog jumped 80 inches. Wow, they wrote it down in their chart. They cut off one leg, brought him back, said, jump, frog, jump. He only jumped 70 inches. Three-legged frog. Brought him back, cut off another leg. Jump, frog, jump. He only jumped 60 inches. Brought him back, cut off his last leg. Or cut off, well, he only had one leg left. Said, jump, frog, jump. He jumped 50 inches. Brought him back, cut off his last leg. They said, jump, frog, jump. They expected him to go about 40 inches, but he went zero. So they said, well, let's see, let's analyze the data. What conclusions can we come to? The frog jumped less as the legs were removed. Good observation. Conclusion. Frog went deaf. Wrong conclusion. Good observation. Wrong conclusion. Sorry about that, fellas. They did the same thing with the fruit flies. For years, they raised flies in the laboratory. They nuked them and microwaved them and x-rayed them, and they got all sorts of mutated flies. They got flies with curled wings. They fly around. Bzz, 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 couldn't go anywhere. Flies with red eyes and white eyes and brown eyes. They got flies with no wings. What do you call that? A crawl? Can't fly? After raising 80,000 generations of flies, somebody wrote a report and said, folks, we've raised a lot of flies in the laboratory. We've seen a lot of mutations. He said, but we've never seen a beneficial mutation. So we conclude that all the mutations we observed made the fly worse off than the original fly. Therefore, we must conclude that flies have evolved as far as they can go. frog jump. It might be another way to look at this, folks. How fast was that calf going? Anyway, maybe God made him right to begin with. I mean, wouldn't that be a reasonable conclusion to draw from the data? They did the same thing with the peppered moth. This is in every textbook I've ever seen on teaching evolution. Somebody in England went around and counted the moths on the trees. Must have been a government project. They discovered it was 95% light-colored moths and only 5% black. Then they started burning coal in the factories and the trees turned black from the soot, so they counted the moths again, you know, renewed their grant. And now it was 95% black moths and only 5% light. He said, wow, look at this. That white moth evolved into a black moth. No. Then when they quit burning coal in the factories, the trees turned light again. And the population shifted right back to light-colored moths. And this is the best example they've got of evolution, folks. What conclusions can we reach? Let's see. The moth population shifted from mostly white to mostly black. Moth population was able to adapt to a new environment. Good observation. Conclusion. This helps prove we all came from a rock. No. They even have the kids do activities. Boys and girls, get a large sheet of black paper, 1 meter square. By the way, folks, I like to kick this dog every time I walk by. Did you know all the new textbooks are metric? Now, I understand the metric system real thoroughly. I taught physics. I'll take a metric quiz against anybody you know. But I'm not sure I want a kid coming to help build my house that doesn't know what a 2x4 is. So if you're a patriot, make your paper 39.37 inches instead. And then get 200 black circles and 200 white circles and cut them out and throw them on the paper. Okay, now, boys and girls, we're going to see who can pick up the most in 1 minute. Ready, set, go. Of course you're going to pick up the white circles off the black paper. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. And they're going to say, see, boys and girls, this proves evolution. No, teacher, this proves we've got extra money to waste in our school district. We just cut up a whole bunch of good paper and threw it on the floor. You know, the lug nuts from a Pontiac will screw onto a Chevy. They will. That proves they both evolved from a Honda 38 million years ago. What more proof could you want? You know, I think the fact that the peppered moth produces two colors of babies is intelligent design. I think the Creator was thinking ahead. He gave them a gene pool to produce a variety of colors so some will survive no matter what happens to the environment. Did you know General Motors puts a heater and an air conditioner in some of their cars? I've seen them. I drove one. Don't heaters and air conditioners do the opposite thing? Yeah. What would you say? That's dumb. Oh, no. That's planning ahead. And the peppered moth is a great example of creation. But the Creator will never be praised for his creation in a public school textbook. They're going to use it as an example of evolution. And then they have the gall to tell the students to think critically. Now look at this question. Boys and girls, do you think humans are still evolving? What kind of question is that? That's one of those questions like, have you stopped beating your wife yet? Well, if I say yes, I'm admitting I did. If I say no, I'm still doing it. Right? Doesn't the question assume evolution happened? Suppose a kid doesn't believe in evolution at all. How's he supposed to answer that question? That's not teaching him how to think. That's teaching him what to think. Soviet-style indoctrination. That's exactly what that is, folks. And our textbooks are full of it. Then they show the kids the bone structure of different animals. They'll say, boys and girls, did you know you've got two bones in your wrist, the radius and the ulna? And boys and girls, did you know the whale has two bones in his flipper, and they're called the radius and the ulna? Wow. Who named them, teacher? The whale? And boys and girls, all these animals have similar bone structure. Notice the bird, the horse, and the human have similar bone structure. Yes, boys and girls, comparative anatomy provides further evidence of evolution. The commonality suggests these animals are all related. They probably evolved from a common ancestor. Now, hold on just a minute. It's true they have a similar observation. That's true. I'll go along with that. Here's the conclusion they came to. Many animals have a similar forelimb structure. I agree with that. They must have had a common ancestor. No. I think they had a common designer. Same guy designed them all. And it doesn't help prove we all came from a rock. But that's what the kids are going to be taught in school. This is supposed to be part of the evidence amassed for evolution in order to get them to believe that dumb theory. There aren't many things about evolution that make me madder than this, so I'll try to stay calm. But one of the things that's in every biology textbook is the idea that the different embryos go through the stages of evolution as they develop. The fancy phrase for that is ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny, which means as the baby develops in the mother, it goes through the stages of fish, like just memorize the word farm, fish, amphibian, reptile, mammal, and it slowly becomes a human later on. This whole thing, the idea of the human embryo having gill slits. How many have ever heard of that before? The gills on a human? That was made up by a guy named Ernst Haeckel back in 1870. He hated the Bible. Darwin had said in his book, "We're going to find evidence for my theory." 10 years later, they had none. So Ernst Haeckel made some up. Ernst Haeckel hated the Bible. He took the drawing of a human and a dog embryo at 4 weeks' development, and he changed them to make them look alike. He traveled all over Germany with huge pictures that he made with them looking just alike. Compared to what they really look like, there is no similarity. And Ernst Haeckel basically single-handedly converted Germany over to being evolutionists. He was an evangelist for evolution. And the direct result of Ernst Haeckel's teaching was ultimately Adolf Hitler, the superior race with Nietzsche and the super race and all this kind of stuff. We don't have time to get into all that. I cover that in videotape number 5. But Ernst Haeckel took these drawings. The drawings that he made are right here. They were fake. They were fraud. Here's what the animals actually look like if you get them into that stage. No similarities at all. Top drawings are Ernst Haeckel's. The bottom drawings are what they really look like. He said those little folds of skin were gill slits. Those are not gill slits, folks. I've seen fat people with 5 or 6 chins. They can't breathe through any of them but the top one. Those are not gill slits. Each one later develops into the mandible, the masseter muscle, the sternocleidomastoid. It has nothing to do with breathing. This whole thing was fake. Ernst Haeckel was even convicted of fraud at his own university. He taught at the University of Jena. In 1874, it was proven he lied. The gill slit idea is baloney. But guess what? It's still in the textbooks. Hope Biology, 1994 edition, used in Pensacola, Florida, says the human embryo has gill pouches. Proven wrong 125 years ago. It's still in college textbooks. How long does it take to get your book up to date anyway? I'll tell you why they keep it in there, folks, in a minute. Look at this textbook says. They show a 5 to 6 week human embryo, but the textbook says by 7 months, the fetus looks from the outside like a tiny normal baby, but it is not. It's not a baby at 7 months. My son was born at 5 months and survived. He's doing fine. Weighs 200 pounds now. You know why they call it a fetus at 7 months? Let's see. The angel of the Lord said, "Thou art with fetus." No, thou art with child. It's a child. It's a human the instant it's conceived. And to terminate the life after conception is murder. You might have heard of Anna Rosa. She had her arm chopped off in a botched abortion. She survived. Still alive today, as far as I know. Ask any abortionist. You say, "You think that's terrible?" They'll say, "Oh, that's terrible." Then say, "Suppose they would have cut her head off instead. It would have been fine, wouldn't it?" It happened today in America about 4,000 times. Probably right here in this city, I don't know. The Bible talks about that. "Cursed be he that taketh reward to slay an innocent person." And all the people shall say,
"Amen."
Amen. You might have heard of my town. I live in Pensacola, Florida. We've had 2 doctors shot and killed, several abortion clinics blown up or burned down. I did not blow any clinics up, and I did not shoot any doctors. And I don't think Jesus would do it that way either. He grew up under Roman control. He didn't go around blowing up tanks and burning down bridges. But you know, the doctors were murderers, plain and simple. I was preaching in Fort Lauderdale the day the first doctor got shot. Next day, I was flying home, and right in front of me were two of the women from NOW, National Organization of Wild Women. They were going to fly up to Pensacola and march around town with their signs, you know, "Pro-choice, pro-choice." Have you noticed the news media and the textbooks always call them pro-choice? They call us anti-abortion. There's a reason they do that. Nobody wants to be an anti. It's a negative term. How about if they call us pro-life and call them pro-death? Yeah. Anyway, as we were getting off the plane, walking down the gangway, I noticed these two ladies, women, I mean, had on their shirt in huge block letters, "Choice above all." So, being my mild-mannered self, I said, "Excuse me, ma'am, what does that mean, choice above all?" She said, "We believe a woman ought to have a right to choose." I said, "Choose what?" She said, "Choose if she wants to have an abortion. It's her body, you know." "Well, yes, ma'am. If she wants to abort her body, I suppose that's fine." "Looks to me like she wants to abort somebody else's body." I said, "Ma'am, I'm kind of curious about this. I got 3 kids. I delivered one of my kids at home. I taught biology and anatomy. I used to raise hamsters. I'm kind of familiar with how this works." I said, "Tell me, ma'am, why does the woman's right to choice stop at birth?" Why don't we let the mother choose to kill the baby after it's born? It'd be a lot safer and simpler. I got a brilliant idea. Let's extend abortion rights up until the kid's 2 years old. I know a lot of mothers with a 2-year-old that have thought about it. I won't ask you to raise your hand, but I know you're out there. Hey, I got a brilliant idea. Let's extend abortion rights until the kid is 18. I bet they'd behave a lot better. Look, Johnny, one more time, and I'm going to abort you. Teacher, where's Johnny today? Well, Johnny didn't do his homework last night, so his mommy aborted him. Hey, grades would skyrocket, folks, I'm telling you. Anyway, the women did not want to talk about it anymore, so they went down and got their luggage, and I got my luggage, and I'm waiting for a ride home with the taxi cab, you know. And I noticed there's a cameraman there. He showed up from Chicago to film this rally. And I thought, 6 people are going to march around town, and it's going to make worldwide news? You can get 100,000 people to line your streets against abortion, and it won't make the news. Have you noticed that? That's one of the reasons I don't take the local paper. We get a call about once a month. Mr. Hovind, would you like to take the Pensacola News Journal? I say, no, ma'am. I don't have a parakeet. A couple of weeks ago. That's what I tell him. I do. Well, I don't. He died. Anyway, I was talking to the cameraman, and I said, you know, I live right here in Pensacola. And I think there's 2 things wrong with what happened to this doctor. He said, oh, yeah, what's wrong with this? I said, well, there should have been a trial first. Nobody should be shot without a fair trial. Secondly, the state of Florida should have shot him. Griffith shouldn't have shot him. If you don't understand my position on abortion, see me later. I'll try to clarify it for you. But the logic they use to justify abortion is insane. They're going to say, well, it's not a human. I'm sorry, that was proven wrong in 1874. It's a human the instant it's conceived. Don't fall behind that stupid logic. They're going to say, well, it's not viable. It can't live on its own. Well, you're not viable stark naked on the North Pole yourself. Is the baby viable after it's born? Lay it on the sidewalk for a couple of months. Let's see how it does. Just because it can't live on its own, we have the right to kill it? Now think about that. I know kids that are 25 that still come borrow money from Dad. Hey, Dad, can I borrow some money? You ought to be able to live on your own by now, son. How about this? The child may be unwanted. There's kids that are already born that are unwanted. My parents moved 4 times when I was growing up, but I found them every time. How about this? The child may be a financial burden. Show me a kid that's not. How about this? The child may be rape or incest. Well, then you kill the rapist, not the baby. Man. Hey, in case you don't know how it works, there are 3 people involved here. The mother, the father, and the baby. If we have to kill one of them, why is it always the baby? Why don't we abort the mother or the father once in a while? I got a brilliant idea. Pass a law that says if anybody wants to go for an abortion, they go into the doctor has a bag with 3 marbles in it. They reach in and pick out which one gets aborted. Mother, father, baby. Simple, right? That's how they pick judges for cases, isn't it? How about this? They're going to say, well, abortion's legal. Well, that doesn't mean it's right. You know, in 1936, the German Supreme Court declared Jews are not persons. So when Hitler's guards killed the Jews, it was perfectly legal. Was it right? It was murder. Revolutionary War, only 25,000 Americans died. World War II, 400,000 died. As of now, we're up over 38 million that have died by abortion in this country, folks. And we're out here praying, God bless America, and God's up there saying, forget it, man, I'm fixing to judge you folks. You are in trouble. And we deserve whatever he gives us, folks. All right. You might have heard of this lady, a woman, Margaret Sanger. She started a group called Planned Parenthood. Margaret Sanger was a racist. She hated blacks, Hispanics, Jews, anybody that wasn't Aryan, the superior race. Blonde-haired, blue-eyed, Norwegian, void and thought it dog, the superior race. Margaret Sanger, though, started this group called Planned Parenthood to eliminate the inferiors. But clear up until 1952, they were still against abortion. Here's a document published by Planned Parenthood, 1952. How to plan your children. Questions answered about birth control. Is it an abortion? In 1952, they said definitely not. An abortion requires an operation. It kills the life of a baby after it has begun. It is dangerous to your life and health. It may make you sterile. Boy, have they changed their tune in 40 years, haven't they? Now $300 million of your tax dollars goes to support Planned Parenthood, killing babies all over the world. This is my session break, for I normally do this in 2 hours. I took some section out of the middle here, so let's disregard what you're looking at. Okay, the textbooks will say, now boys and girls, did you know you have an appendix that is vestigial? It's what? Vestigial. You don't need it anymore. Excuse me, you do need your appendix. It's part of the immune system. Now, it's true you can live without it, okay? But something else has to work harder, that's all. You can live without both your legs and both your arms, too. It doesn't prove you don't need it. The appendix on a human is much smaller than the one on a horse. And they're going to say, boys and girls, let's see, what conclusions can we come to? Man has a smaller appendix than a horse. Good observation. Conclusion, man must be slowly losing his appendix. Ah, wrong, man. That frog's deaf, ain't he? No. That doesn't prove we all came from a rock, folks. We have a small appendix because that's all we need. It's part of the immune system. You don't need any more than that. Textbook says the whale has a vestigial pelvis. Look at this. Many organisms retain traces of their evolutionary history. For example, the whale retains pelvic and leg bones as useless vestiges. This textbook says the whale's pelvis is evidence of its evolution from four-legged land-dwelling mammals. Excuse me, those bones in the whale are not vestigial pelvis. Muscles attached to those bones. And without those muscles and those bones, you cannot get any more baby whales. They have to have them in order to reproduce. So the guy that wrote this is either ignorant of his whale anatomy and should not be writing a book about it, or he's a liar trying to promote his theory. I would be merciful and say he's stupid. Hopefully he's not lying deliberately, but look at this, a children's book about whales. First sentence in the book. Just imagine whales walking around. It's true. Kids are being brainwashed, folks. That's propaganda. Look at this textbook. Humans have a tailbone that is of no apparent use. I couldn't believe it. I was having a debate in North Alabama against the president of the North Alabama Atheist Association, or something like that. He got up in front of God and everybody and said, folks, we've got proof for evolution. The humans have a tailbone they no longer need. When it was my turn, I got up and I said, Mr. Patterson, I taught biology and anatomy. I happen to know there are 9 little muscles that attach to the tailbone, without which you cannot perform some very valuable functions. I will not tell you what they all are, but trust me, you need those muscles. I said, now, if you think the tailbone is vestigial, I, Kent Hovind, will pay to have yours removed. Bend over. Anybody thinks the tailbone is vestigial is either dumb or a liar. I can't understand how they could believe that. Certainly that has no business being in a textbook. And if we had time, I'd go into some of the things you can do to get stuff out like this out of your textbook. It's on the end of my videotape number 4. We won't get that far today. But this textbook says plants have adapted to their environment. Now you got to watch it, folks. That word adapted is a code word. They say gills are an adaptation to living in water. Well, how did the fish live before it adapted the gills? Oh, they didn't live. They all drowned for many generations. Why don't they say it's a design feature? They don't want to use that word design because then some kid might say, who's the designer? Logical question. By the way, you don't have to see the designer to believe he exists. I've never been to Japan, but I have a Casio DataBank stopwatch. Walmart, $50. This thing holds 150 phone numbers. It holds my schedule for 2 weeks. It's a countdown timer, a stopwatch, a calculator. It does not tell time. You have to look at it. But this is an amazing machine. Now, some of you are going to get that about Monday. Oh, it's one of those water jokes. Has to soak in. Oh. I don't have to go to Japan to see the designer to believe there's a designer for this watch, do I? Wouldn't you say it's logical to say there's a complex machine, there must have been a designer? That's logical. Whether I ever see him or not doesn't matter. And see, when you look at a complex machine, you ought to come to 2 conclusions. There is a designer, and he's pretty smart. Right? And when you look at the world, students that study science ought to come to 2 conclusions. There is a designer, and he's pretty smart. But they're not taught that, are they? Students are taught that life evolved from non-living material. We don't have time to go into all this, but they say, boys and girls, swirling in the waters is a bubbling broth of complex chemicals. Progress from a complex chemical soup to a living organism is very slow. I guess it is. Totally stopped. Doesn't happen at all. I have stuff to go forever and ever on this topic. We're going to skip this. I want to get into some more stuff that you can get all this on videotape number 4 about did they make life in the laboratory? No, they certainly came nowhere close to making life in the laboratory. Let me page down here a few more. Okay. Ooh, no record of the event. I like that one. They say humans probably evolved from bacteria that lived more than 4 billion years ago. Was your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa a bacteria? They make these family trees to show that the bacteria slowly evolved to the human, right? Those family trees are a lot of nonsense. Even Mary Leakey, who believes in evolution, says that. And Stephen Gould from Harvard University, where they packed the kind of yard, he said, the evolutionary trees that adorn our textbooks are not the evidence of fossils. They're making it up, folks. It's all imagination. Now, wouldn't this chart teach the kids that the humans, the birds, and the crocodiles have a common ancestor? Isn't that the clear teaching of this picture? You don't need to be a genius to figure out that's going to ruin some kid's faith in the Bible. And anybody that goes around ruining child's faith in the Bible better read what Jesus said about it. Whoso shall offend one of these little ones that believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Anybody that teaches evolution is in trouble when they face God, folks. This textbook says, boys and girls, all the many forms of life on earth today are descended from a common ancestor, found in a population of primitive unicellular organisms. What on earth is a primitive unicellular organism? By the way, there's no such thing. They're going to say, but no traces of those events remain. Boys and girls, we know what happened, and you're going to be tested on this, but there's no proof. Try that one in a court of law, see how far you get. They say because it's a single cell, it's therefore primitive. Folks, a single cell, like a paramecium, is more complex than the space shuttle. And you can put thousands of those into one drop of water. Smaller is not simpler. They have microchips now that go inside a paperclip. Smaller is more complex. Let's compare the brain of a honeybee, which is pretty small, to NASA's Cray computer, the YMPC-90. The Cray computer is huge. It is capable of doing about 6 billion calculations per second. The honeybee can do about 1,000 billion calculations per second. The honeybee's brain is 166 times faster than a Cray computer. Let's see, energy consumption. The honeybee only uses 10 microwatts. The honeybee can fly 1 million miles on 1 gallon of honey. Let me see you invent a machine that gets 1 million miles per gallon. My Heavenly Father did. He's pretty smart, ain't he? What about the cost? Well, the honeybee's brain is pretty cheap, man. You splat them on your windshield all the time. Cray costs $48 million. Maintenance personnel? Nobody heals the honeybee. Heals himself. You build a computer that heals itself, why don't you? Cray weighs 2,300 pounds. Let's see, the supercomputer is huge, slow, inefficient, costs a lot of money. You have to babysit the dumb thing. It had to be designed. But they'll turn right around and think the brain of a honeybee evolved. I still got my same question. Are you dumb in any other area? Had to be designed, folks. Computer is far too complex to have happened by chance. The brain is smaller, faster, of a honeybee, more efficient, weighs less, heals itself, but it's a naturally occurring object. And they know that since they didn't build it, naturally occurring objects must have evolved, so that proves we all came from a rock, folks. I mean, what more proof could you want? And the brain of a human is a lot more complex than a honeybee. You can walk into a room and look around the room, and in 1 second, your brain picks up enough information to keep the Cray supercomputer busy for 1,000 years analyzing it. The DNA, the molecule in your body, the chromosomes, is the most complex molecule in the universe. The average person in this room has about 50 trillion cells in their body, each cell more complex than a space shuttle. Each of those cells contains chromosomes. If you extracted all the DNA, you would have 2 tablespoons. That's it. But if you stretched out that DNA code from your body, just one person's DNA stretched out would reach from Earth to the moon and back 5 million times out of 2 tablespoons. And if you typed out the code in your DNA, it would be more than all the computer codes ever produced by man in the history of humanity. And if you took this incredible complex code and typed it out, you would end up with enough books when you got done to fill Grand Canyon 40 times. David said, I will praise thee, I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. And he didn't even have a microscope and he could figure it out. You know, the odds of one DNA happening by chance are 1 times 10 to the 119,000th power. One professor told me in a debate, he said, you know, if we can just get one DNA by chance, evolution can take it from there. Well, there's your odds against getting one, but I'll give you one. I'll give you 2 if it'll help. I did a bunch of research on this. I decided, you know, the more chromosomes you have, the more complex you are, because it's the most complex molecule in the universe. So I arranged a bunch of stuff in order based upon their chromosome number. I discovered in my research that penicillin has 2 chromosomes. Fruit flies have 8. This proves flies slowly evolved from penicillin. And very slowly, over millions of years, they turned into either a tomato or a house fly. They both have 12. Identical twins, you know. And then very slowly became a pea over millions of years, and then slowly changed to a honeybee, and then lettuce, and finally a carrot. And when we got to 22 chromosomes, a miracle took place. Triplets. The possum, the redwood tree, and the kidney bean all have 22 chromosomes, folks. Identical. Can't hardly tell the difference. Let's see if we can figure this out now. 22 chromosomes. Let's see. Tree. Right. Possum. Correct. Kidney bean. And this guy can't figure out how come they're all identical. And very slowly, over millions of years, we got enough chromosomes to be a human. We have 46. And if we can just get 2 more, we're going to be a tobacco plant. I know some people already smell like it. Sometimes I'll get on the elevator and I'll say, man, you're evolving. You're way ahead of me. How did you do that? And then very slowly, over millions of years, we might have enough to be a goldfish. 94. And someday in the far distant future, star date 349572, we're going to have enough to be a fern. I was at a church one day. A lady came to me after church, said, Mr. Hovind, I'm fern. I shook hands with that hand right there. This DNA sequencing, we don't have time to go into all that, is a bunch of baloney. They check the percentage of differences between these critters and think that is somehow proof for evolution. We don't have time to go into all that. But they're going to tell the kids in school, the human and the orangutan are 96% similar. That proves they evolved from a common ancestor 15 million years ago. Now hold on just a minute. Similar DNA codes proves a common designer, same engineer. Not the same ancestor. Same guy designed the code. And humans and chimpanzees have thousands of differences. But if you think the percentage of difference makes this something, mean something, okay. Did you know that the human cytochrome C is closest to a sunflower? It depends what you want to compare. You want to compare the human eyes? We're closest to an octopus. It depends what you want to compare, folks. How about specific blood gravity? Well, then you're closest to a rabbit or a pig. What about the milk? Well, you're closest to a donkey. Look, if we didn't have similar structures as these other animals, we could only eat other humans. I mean, think about it. God made it all out of the same material so we could eat other stuff besides each other. Anyway, we got to go on here. We're going to run out of time. He's going to come out and grab you with one of them hooks in a minute. If you think percentage of difference means something, let me show you the research I've been doing, folks. I've been doing a lot of research on the evolutionary ancestry of quite a few objects based upon their water content. I discovered clouds are 100% water. Watermelons are 97%. Only 3% difference. That proves common ancestor. Not only that, I found a missing link. Jellyfish are 98% water, and so are snow cones. They're going to tell the kids in school that the horse used to have 4 toes. Slowly evolved to a 1-toed horse. What they don't tell the kids is the so-called 4-toed horse has 18 pairs of ribs. This one has 15, this one has 19, and this one has 18 again. This horse evolution is a bunch of baloney, but guess what? It's still on display in your textbook in your town right now. I'll guarantee it. It was made up by Othniel Marsh. It doesn't exist anywhere in the world. If we had time, we'd spend hours on this. But folks, our kids are being brainwashed into believing this theory. They're being lied to. The Tulsa Zoo removed their display of horse evolution because 2,000 people in the community said, sign the petition, we want it out. The guy, a friend of mine, he wrote to the Tulsa Zoo and said, why do you have the horse evolution in there? It's been proven wrong 50 years ago. The director wrote back and said, we haven't had the funding to remove it. I got the letters at home. I couldn't believe it. Still on display at Yale University, though. While I stood there at Yale, hundreds of kids went through that museum and were never told this is wrong. They were being brainwashed. Arranging animals in order doesn't prove anything. If you think it does, let me show you the research I've been doing. I'm a research scientist, you know. I've been arranging silverware in order for years. I believe the knife slowly evolved into the spoon. It took a long time, now millions of years. And then very slowly, erosion cut grooves in the end, and it became a fork. But I felt like I had a missing link, particularly between the spoon and the fork. You see, spoons are rounded and have no grooves. Forks are squared and have grooves. That's 2 jumps in one. Even punctuated equilibrium couldn't do that. So I knew there must be a missing link in here, but I couldn't find it. Until one day, I was flying to Connecticut on U.S. Air. I was 30,000 feet off the ground, and the stewardess came down the aisle and handed me the missing link. I don't think she knew what she had. But my trained scientific eye picked it up right away. I said, wow, this is it. I put it in my pocket. Later that day, I went to Kentucky Fried Chicken. There they are, folks. I got them. The missing links. So, the evolution of silverware is becoming very complete. This means I'm ready to apply for a government grant. Oh, I wish we had time to go another hour, folks. Honestly, this evolution theory is not just dumb. It's dangerous. Let me put it to you in a nutshell. If the creation story is true, then man is a fallen creature, and he needs a savior. But if the evolution story is true, we are not a fallen creature. We don't need a savior. That's what it boils down to. If the evolution story is true, death brought man into the world. If the creation story is true, man brought death into the world. If the creation story is true, there's a creator. If the evolution story is true, there is no creator. If the creation story is true, then we have rights that come from the creator. Like our founding father said, we are endowed by our creator with certain unalienable rights. That's called a republic. See, in a republic, the law is supreme. And everybody must obey the law. The president, her husband, everybody must obey the law. Now, in a democracy, the majority is supreme, and there is no such thing as an absolute authority. I have atheists tell me all the time, they say there are no absolutes. I always say, are you absolutely sure? Blows their little mind. I spoke at a public school in Pennsylvania. One kid sat on the second row. He said, Mr. Hovind, I'm an atheist. I said, really? He said, yeah, there is no God. I said, you sure? He said, I'm sure. I said, well, tell me, son, do you know everything? He said, oh, no. I said, well, do you know half of everything? He said, no. I said, well, let's pretend that you know half of everything. Is it possible that God exists in the other half you don't know? I said, by the way, son, if you're an atheist, how do you decide right and wrong? He said, oh, that's easy. I decide what's right and wrong. He said, I'm the God of my own universe. I said, son, I'm glad to hear about that because I'm going to shoot you in 5 minutes. He said, you can't do that. I said, oh, yes, I can. You see, I'm the God of my own universe. And I decided it's fine for me to shoot you. Folks, that is precisely why we got the problem we've got in our country right now. When you tell a kid something is wrong, first question he says, oh, yeah? Says who? Right? America used to have, thus saith the Lord. That's who. But we've lost that. And we have shifted that and traded that in for what saith the majority. They take a poll to determine right and wrong. Hey, which way y'all going? I'll lead. And I get nervous when I hear our president say, we want to spread democracy around the world. That's a terrible form of government. They always end up being totalitarian. We need to spread Jesus around the world. That's what we need to do, folks. Now, I'll be glad to be helped, any help I can be. If you want to get my material out there, I don't push it. It's not copyrighted. You can even get my videos, copy them, send them back, and get your money back. Now, see, I'm an independent, temperamental, fundamental Baptist, and I learned years ago that Baptists do not steal, but they do borrow and never return. So, I won't loan you anything, but I'll sell it to you, and then I'll buy it back when you're done. Okay? Of course, now, if you think you can lose your salvation, I could loan it to you, because if you didn't bring it back, you'd die and go to hell. But them Baptists, they're eternally secure, and they know it. They don't loan nothing to a Baptist. But anyway, I'd love to be a help if I can be. Honestly, folks, there's a war going on. We better get involved. Thank you so much for your time.
If you'd like information about purchasing this presentation on videotape, or for a tape catalog of all of the Stealing the Mind of America audio or videotapes, or for future conference information, call Compass at 1-800-977-2177. Or you can write to Compass at 460 Canfield Avenue, Suite 1000, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, 83815.